Welcome to Hype, episode 184. For real this time. For real. I'm sorry that I've been so messed up with the numbers the past couple of weeks, but this is actually episode 184, so we're back on track. My name is Selena, and I'm joined this week by Pam. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Selena.
We are back.
We are back.
Again. Every week we're like, oh my god, we're back.
Guess what, guys? Isn't it Octavia in The Hundred that's like, we're back, bitches?
We're back, bitches.
That's pretty accurate or relative to our future discussion on this episode. So
actually, you are so right. What a topical reference with which you chose to start the show. So we have so much to get into this week. We'll be talking a little bit completely spoiler-free about Infinity War, which I have seen. We're going to be talking about the latest movie and TV news, and then in the TV show section, we will be discussing the premiere of The 100 Season 5, full of spoilers. So that's a thing that I can finally do, and that Pam can do, and that we're very excited about. But before we get to any of that, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information. If you want to tell us what you thought about The 100 or Infinity War or any of the other things we talk about this week, you can send us an email, hype@hypeable.com. You can send us a tweet, which is @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram as well. That's also @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And finally, if you are interested, you can check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. I'm going to be doing my video for this month, either today or tomorrow. And we have the bonus segments from the past couple of weeks up there as well now. So everyone who's a patron, if you subscribed for $2 a month, you get a weekly bonus discussion as well as videos, as well as whatever else we put up there. I believe last week's bonus was the Merlin commentary for Lancelot. Is that right?
Yes. Well, like not last week, but like the week before last, because we didn't record an episode last week.
Oh, right. Right. Well,
the last episode's like, yeah, bonus was the Merlin. Yeah. It was good.
Yes, it was really fun. And now hopefully very soon we can actually do our discussion for 4 and 5 of season one. We're getting there, guys, slowly. But you can check out all of those at patreon.com/hypepodcast. And this week's bonus discussion is going to be about the recent news that Disney's Mulan may be cutting out Li Shang, the lead male character. So we have some thoughts and we will share them with you over there. All right, so without further ado, let us head into how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And Pam, I'm very excited to hear about yours, actually.
Are you?
I am. I haven't checked this out at
all. So I wasn't going to play this, but, you know, FOMO set in when I was on Twitter this morning and all of my friends were like, OMG, just downloaded the new Hogwarts mystery game. Now I can, you know, live out my Hogwarts fantasy. And I was like, I'm going to have to play now because I need to understand what everybody's talking about. So we learned about this game a few months ago and you could have actually pre-registered, I guess, to play this game. But I was like looking through some of the hashtag tweets about this, and it kind of sounded like a lot of people didn't get notified and like weren't even the first to like download the game. So that didn't really make very much of a difference in contrast to like pre-registering for Pottermore back in the first iteration where it did make more of a difference. Anyway, you can download it now hassle-free in either App Store for Android or Apple. And I have to say, like, the graphics for this are, like, really, really lovely. To me, it kind of reminds me a lot of, like, The Sims, you know, in terms of style and stuff, except there's a limit to what you can control. Like, you're definitely, like, following a very linear story, but you do have, like, some choices and stuff. So, yeah, I played a few levels of that. And my only gripe with this is that you run out of energy really fast. And, like, if you run out of energy, you can't, like, do anything until your time is up. And sometimes, like, the time frame to wait is, like, really, really long unless you buy...
Like, how long?
Like, like 5 hours, 2 hours. What? Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I haven't like touched it since like I got the people who have played will understand this. I literally like left my character, me, my animated character in this Hogwarts Mystery game, being strangled by a devil's snare because I didn't have energy left to fight the thing off.
What the? That's so weird.
Yeah. So like, this is kind of like the game's ploy to get you to buy things and in-app purchases, because you can either wait for the time to like run out and then they'll give you more energy, or you can buy extra jewels and then buy energy that way through the game. I don't like, it's kind of weird because like you can collect a lot of things along the way. So like I was playing and I was like, oh, I'm collecting all these coins. I'll just like buy whatever I need. But like I haven't been able to use the coins to buy anything except like a new hairstyle. And I don't really care very much about that. Like I'd rather just buy more playtime. And you can only use, like, the jewels to buy more energy. It's not the same thing. But you can only buy the jewels with money. So.
Oh, my God. It's, like, this whole big thing.
It is really frustrating. It's not, like, I mean, like, Pokemon Go, for example, is really immersive. And it's, I think it's much more interactive in a different way. And I'm sure they have in-app purchases for other things, but it never kind of stalls your gameplay. Like, the only thing that stalls your gameplay is if you don't go outside, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of something that I feel like they maybe shouldn't have introduced so early on, because that's, like, literally still chapter one or two, the Devil's Snare.
Oh, my God.
And I was reading on Twitter, too, because, like, following the hashtag that... that it actually starts running out faster as you, like, progress in levels, like, with the idea that things get more difficult, so you need more energy to do them. It's, like, this whole big to-do. So I hope that they fix that, because I would definitely be, like, interested in seeing where it plays out. There is, like, a story. There's, like, a background story that everybody is following, but also, like, you're following as your own character. And it is kind of, like, interesting. It deals with, like your brother in the game who got like expelled from Hogwarts and stuff like that. So like there is a story and it all takes place before Harry gets to Hogwarts. And it would be interesting to find out how that ends, but like not at the expense of my wallet. So yeah, please fix that, Hogwarts Mystery game developers, and make it easier, I guess, to earn energy.
Oh, it so frustrates me. Like I know it's a little bit unfair to hold Harry Potter up to like such a standard that you don't hold anything else up to. But every time there's like this monetizing aspect of the wizarding world, I get really frustrated. You know, it's the same kind of like gatekeeping around. It's not the same. It's like totally different. But it's like, it reminds me of the gatekeeping around Cursed Child, where they're like, oh, you'll see it for sure. Like, we're going to send it to New York and you just need to spend thousands of dollars. You'll see it, wink, wink, you know? And I'm like, why would you do this? Potter, what's it called? Pokemon Go found such a good way of, however they did it, of making it so you can play it without spending any money.
Yeah, and there's, like, a lot of games out there, too, where it's like, oh, like, if you don't want to buy life or whatever, like, you sit through, like, these 5 ads and we'll give you, like, extra life or... you know, go like flipendo some friggin' garden gnomes and we'll give you more life. You know, there's other ways to get around this. I just looked at the in-app purchases, like, so the handful of gems, which is like what you need to buy life, it's like 25 gems and you need like at least 30 to do anything, really, is 99 cents, and then it goes up from there to $4.99 for 130, and then $9.99 for like 250, and like so on and so forth. You can buy up to like $100 worth of gems on this game, and I really hope nobody's doing that, because it's not worth it, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like, I would like, if they want to fix something, I would really like to see them put more into the game that allows you to kind of like win these on your own. I'm not saying you have to win like the whole thing and it's fine to make people wait, but like figure out another way to do this, because yeah, it's just, it kind of sucks.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll try to check it out and see how far I get before I get frustrated. But next up, I did want to talk a little bit about my How We Hype this week, which, believe it or not, is not the 100, even though that is how I've been spending like 98% of my time for the past week. I am to the brim with 100 at the moment, shall we say, but that's not for now. We'll talk about that in the TV section, the first episode. But if you are a 100 fan, I do want to shout out that there are over on Hypeable currently an interview with Jason Rothenberg, an interview with Lindsay Morgan, an interview with Luisa D'Oliveira, as well as a review of the first episode. And hopefully by the time you read, actually no, not by the time, tomorrow when you're listening to this, there will be a small preview for the second episode as well, which airs next week. So you can read that over on Hypeable.com. But here in my How We Hype, I actually want to talk about Infinity War, which, for once, while I'm still waiting for Lady Bird, I went to see Infinity War a couple of days ahead of the US premiere, because that's how the Marvel and like Disney premieres work over here for some reason. We always get those a couple of days before, and then we have to wait like 6 months for everything else. That's about the model for how it works. So I know that when this goes out, very few people will have seen Infinity War, and Pam hasn't seen it either. So I was debating, like, not saying anything at all, but I was like, you know what? I've seen it. And like, I know I'm pretty good at this point of previewing things without spoiling them. So why don't I just give it a whirl? And then if you don't like want to hear any opinion spoilers or anything like that, you can just skip this part or wait to listen until you've seen the film. But yeah, so I went to see it with my brother, and I, as you guys know, if you have, and again, I will not spoil this movie, so don't worry, I'm just going to tell you my impression of it. Okay. So yeah, I, as you guys know, I'm not a massive Marvel fan, not like because I don't want to be, but because I always, almost always end up being disappointed by the movies. To be completely honest, the only movies that I have genuinely watched and enjoyed are the first Avengers, which is still my favorite, and the first Guardians of the Galaxy, and the second Avengers. Like, I like this movie. I know it's like cool to hate it and stuff, but I still really like the second Avengers. And then also Black Panther. And there might have been like one or two others along the way, and the first Captain America, I also really like that one. So it's very, very, but I watched them all and I hope to like them each time. So that's how I went into this movie. And it's interesting because this is a good movie. Like, this is a very fun movie. I will say that first of all, it's a very entertaining, action-packed, there's a lot of jokes. There's a lot of jokes that don't land with me because I think me and the Russo brothers don't quite square off, like, what is funny? in terms of, like, the, you know, they set up something really serious happens and then someone says something really serious and then another character is like, predictable joke, and everyone laughs. And I'm like, no, but I knew you were going to do that though, so it's not funny. Like, that's how I felt in all their movies. So that's kind of a thing. But I do think this movie gets more laughs out of me than most of the Russo brothers' other films. So that's good. And there's something in the structure of this movie that I'm not a huge fan of, and I don't really want to be too specific, but I will say it's a very weirdly structured movie, in my opinion, and I think it ends up repeating itself. Like, a surprising, like, narratively, there are a couple of repetitions that I am excited to talk to Pam about when she's seen the film, because it was something that really, I was like, again? Wait, didn't we just see this? Like, why is it happening again? Like, I had those moments a couple of times in the film. And then there was something in the movie that throughout the movie, it really annoyed me. So this affected my opinion of this movie. And that's why I'm telling you, because it sounds like really negative. And I'm actually not that negative about this film. I thought it was really good. But there was something in this film that I assumed that it's probably not what you think it is. But there was something the movie made me assume that made me really mad. And then I realized, like, near the end, I was like, oh, I get it. So, like, I'd been sitting there really mad for something that actually I shouldn't have been mad about. So that impacted my enjoyment. And I would love to see it again now that I know this thing that I thought that they, like, that was like I didn't know that I what was going on. So
I feel like this happened to you with like another Marvel movie. Like that you thought it was one thing and then it ended up being another and you're like, why was I mad? So it's really funny.
I don't know. I remember a couple of times when I thought it was one thing and it ended up being another thing and I got mad about that.
Anyway, continue with your review.
Right. But so anyway, so that's like that contributed to, I think, an overall, although my issues with the structure still stands, I will say as a whole, the movie is really good. It's really entertaining. I'm glad I went to see it. I think it might be my favorite. Well, that's not fair because Winter Soldier was also very good, but it's definitely, in my opinion, a lot better than Civil War. And I think the emotional beats of the movie really hit. I think it maybe, this is just a personal preference, it maybe spends more time with characters I'm less interested in than it does with the characters I want to see more of, but that's not on the movie. It's just like my preference because they do have a million characters and they did have to make some choices, you know, and that's legit. Like, that's fair. I still don't give a crap about Thanos. Like, that is, I just do not care. Every time he's on screen, I'm like, oh, Thanos. And I'll be curious to see, because everyone's talking about how Marvel has a villain problem. And I'll be curious to see, like, the general consensus of whether they think this movie manages to make Thanos a good villain. I don't think they do. But maybe other people will think that they do, because they certainly try. And then I will say that actually the best thing about this movie is that after having seen it for the first time in maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, no, let's say 5 years. For the first time in 5 years, I am legitimately excited for the next movie. Like, I left this movie, the cinema, going, okay, now give me part two. Which is like a small miracle for me.
This is really big for you.
I know. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So like all my nitpicks, all my blah, like whatever, I left the cinema going, okay, so I am very, very, very hyped for part two now after this movie. And I think that's, I'm really happy with that. I'm really sort of surprised, positively surprised that the movie left me feeling this way. And I cannot wait for you to see it. I cannot wait to talk about it. I debated asking for permission to join that Slack spoiler chat that Hypable set up, but I hate Slack, so I don't want to like give myself more. Because oh my god, a little behind the scenes secrets, Hypable recently switched over to Slack to communicate, and ever since then I have not communicated with anyone because I hate it and I don't know how to do it.
I actually like love Slack though, because I've used it before and I get it. It's like
it's unintuitive, a big headache for me.
It's really hard like getting started, but we can talk about Slack later.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I almost choked. I'm so excited to see this movie. And I'm really excited that you liked it, because, you know, I think that you go in like optimistic but reserved with Marvel movies. So it's really exciting to know that you were really into this.
Yeah, it really invigorated me and my interest in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I might write, I was thinking actually I might write an article about that, because I think that's like a useful perspective. I'm definitely a Marvel skeptic. And this one, after this one, I'm like, okay, I'm ready. Give me the next phase. Give me all the films.
And I think that like a lot of people would come out of the woodwork probably and secretly understand your feels. Mm. And as far as Thanos goes, like, I'm not really familiar with him, but I know a lot of people who are really into like comic books, and he's like a comic book fan favorite villain for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I would be interested to hear like, if you fall into that category after you've watched it, maybe write in and let us know if you feel like he did the comic books justice, or if you kind of felt a little unenthused like Selena did.
Yeah. I mean, there are things in this movie, but we'll get into that. Like it's a mixed bag for me, but ultimately I think it's worth watching, and I think it is an excellent reinvigoration for the cinematic universe. All right. So I guess that's everything. I hope no one felt spoiled by that. Otherwise, I'm sorry. So let's move on into the news, where the first story in the doc is Fantastic Beasts, which is obviously coming back for its second movie later this year, and we are learning new bits of information about the film, specifically more about Dumbledore and his past that has set the fandom ablaze with speculation and or more annoyance. So I thought I would... My official reaction to this on Twitter was sigh, so I thought I would elaborate. A new clip from the film, The Crimes of Grindelwald, debuted at CinemaCon on Tuesday, so a number of people have seen it. We don't have the clip, but we have reports of what it showed. And Andrew wrote up an article on Hypebeast about this, where he said that there was a clip where Jacob jokingly tells Nicholas Flamel, "You don't look a day over 375, which is funny. And they also show a scene of Albus Dumbledore teaching a class the Ridiculous Spell, which is obviously the spell that the Boggart, that Lupin taught the Defense Against the Dark Arts students in movie 3. So in the scene, Newt sees a desk as his Boggart because he's afraid of working an office job, which is cute. And aside from just speculating about what the purpose of the scene is, aside from drawing parallels to Prisoner of Azkaban, people are also noting that it's odd that Dumbledore apparently really appears to be a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher in this movie. You know, we had speculated when we saw that picture of him in the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom, and people were like, no, maybe that's just the place where teachers meet ministry officials. But this one, even though there is a possibility that he's teaching it because it's like technically a transfiguration spell, and he's supposed to be the transfiguration teacher, then where everyone's like, yeah, but maybe they also just made him the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher for the purpose of movie continuity, which is a frustration for us, I think. Have you been keeping up with this? What do you think of this?
I have. It's just, look, we get it.
Okay, Pam, tell us.
Look, we get it. Harry Potter is an adaptation, but at the same time, given that J.K. Rowling is literally writing the script adapted by the author, movies, right? It doesn't make sense why she wouldn't just stick to her own canon, because she literally says in the books that, what's the name of that professor? Anyway, I can't remember the name of the professor. It's like Meriwether or something.
Merrythought.
She'd been the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher for 50 years, and that was in 1947.
Right.
So we're not in 1948, which means that she still has to be the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. Like, I get that you can change your mind, but it just, like, I don't know. It's already in print, so why don't you just, like, go with it? What difference does it make? I guess, like, less Dumbledore airtime if Newt's not learning from him, but just because Dumbledore isn't the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor doesn't mean that Newt can't learn from him outside of school hours. Like, it would have been very easy to step over that.
Yeah, I think if he is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, I think they might find some kind of reason. Like, maybe Professor Merrythought is on leave. You know, maybe she's like studying something in the dark forest and he's taking her class for a semester or what the hell. I just think it's like, along with the trend, like the apparition into Hogwarts, I'm sure they can find an explanation for it. But I think some, like, the general sort of frustration of fans saying, like, you appear to be changing canon for absolutely no reason just to be able to tie it to the movie adaptation of the books. And like, you really, like, it's kind of a little bit, I think people feel like a little bit offended that it's not enough to just make him the transfiguration teacher and to have, to figure out a way to fit this new story into existing canon as opposed to having to bend canon to make whatever point she wants to make. Because I can see, I could see the appeal of him having been a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher because of the parallels to Harry's years at Hogwarts and the idea that the position will one day be cursed and stuff like that. But I guess the scene with the Boggart might be their reason. Like, she came up with that scene and she was like, okay, well, it has to be Dumbledore. So how do we how do we make sure that it's Dumbledore teaching this scene? But I think that's sort of, for me, it just speaks to, it does feel like maybe a little bit insulting to think that they couldn't sort of just stay true to what we know. But I mean, it seems stupid because it's such a tiny thing. And like, again, I'm sure they'll find if he is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, I'm sure they'll find an explanation for it that can be explained by official canon. But I think sort of what frustrates me, I guess, it's like the overly heavy-handedness of the parallels and stuff like that, because I don't think we need that. Like, I don't think Harry Potter needs the crutch of, oh, look, haha, Dumbledore teaches Defense Against the Dark Arts. We know what happens to that job, wink, wink. Like, I think we can expand the universe without making it so very similar. And I think that's an issue that I also had with the first Fantastic Beasts a little bit, is that there were parts where I felt like she jumped over the lowest track. What is that called in English? Like, you know, when you jump over where the fence is lowest.
The that's hurdle?
Like a Danish expression.
I don't know. The lowest hurdle? I don't know.
The lowest hurdle, yes. Let's just say that's what it is. So I think this kind of speaks to that a little bit. So that's why the fandom was reacting to it.
It's just kind of similar to, in a different way, to when we found out that the film is allegedly not explicitly going to dive into Dumbledore's sexuality, even though that's like a really big part of his and Grindelwald's backstory, and everybody was like upset, and Jo was just like, wait, and that was her answer for everything. I guess like technically we could wait, and you know, I'm sure there's somebody out there saying to themselves while they're listening to this, but you know, like Snape subbed for Lupin in Prisoner of Azkaban when he was six, so maybe that's when Dumbledore's doing. I get that, but it's just kind of like, it feels like they just keep releasing all of this stuff that they know is going to, like, cause us to wonder what is happening, you know? Because it's just, like, they're big things. It's not, like, little things. And even if it was little things, like, you know that Harry Potter fans are a little bit crazy. So, like, we're going to pick up on it.
It's just, like, one thing after another.
Yeah. It's just kind of, like, I don't get it. I don't know if it's, like, for more press, because people will be buzzing about, like, how she's basically changed her own story or what, but I just don't like the idea of the aha, like, got you thought that I was crazy because I did this, but like I had a reason all along. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. So that's why it's like, it's a lot of little things that add up, some bigger things that add up to us just being like is this for us, you know? That's the thing, is this for Harry Potter fans, or is this just a franchise? Like, yeah, it's an interesting dilemma. I'm looking forward to seeing the film. After all this, like, I'm looking forward to seeing how the film actually holds up.
Yeah, and there are definitely still things we're excited for. Still, like, Dumbledore.
Yeah, Dumbledore. Anything Dumbledore I'm excited for.
Totally. Well, here's something else that a lot of people were pretty excited about online. Earlier this week, we got our first trailer for Venom, which is, of course, the Spider-Man spinoff. Venom is a really, really big character in the Spider-Man universe over at Marvel. A lot of people see him as like the evil Spider-Man. He actually like is born out of this, I can't remember what like the technical term is, but there's this thing that's brought to Earth from space, and it's kind of like this black oozy slime, and it's a parasite that attaches to other bodies, and that is how Venom is born, via Eddie Brock, who is played by Tom Hardy. And we got our first trailer for this movie. It was actually like a lot. I thought it was going to be like a teaser. This is like way longer than I thought we were going to get. And we get our first real look at Venom and how he kind of like transforms. And we also see Eddie kind of grappling with this newfound power that he suddenly has. And yeah, this trailer looks really good. I'm like very intrigued by this movie, more so than I thought I was going to be. What did you think about this?
I didn't watch it. I don't care about Venom.
All right, that's okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. The movie actually comes out on October 5th, so maybe it is high time we had gotten this full-length trailer. But if you are interested in Venom, you can go over to Hypeable.com and check out the trailer for yourself and let us know what you thought in an email or in a tweet. There's plenty of ways to reach out if you want to talk about your Venom feels.
Absolutely. So moving on to the trailer that I have seen that I'm very excited about, and I am sure everyone's excited about this one. It's Crazy Rich Asians, which is an adaptation of the book by the same name, which stars Constance Wu and Henry Golding as a young couple that fall in love. She goes to meet his family, and it turns out that they are super rich. Crazy rich, I guess, as the title implies. So the trailer is just super fun. I haven't seen the movie, but the trailer looks like a really interesting rom-com love story, basically, of this woman who is finding herself in competition with the mother of, or the future husband, is Michelle Yeoh. And Gemma Chan stars in this one as well, Lisa Liu as well, a bunch of people that you know. Awkwafina is in this, Ken Jeong is in this. So it looks like a really interesting, not only a sweet love story, but also just an examination of, it's a little bit of the trope of like the girlfriend versus the mother, but it's also like a kind of modern update on what that means. You know, he has this quote-unquote crazy rich family, and she is potentially joining that, and she doesn't only have to sort of win over this mother that doesn't think that she is good enough for him, but she also probably has to sort of ask herself if she wants to be a part of that world, because it's a very different world, obviously, from the one she's used to, because it's crazy rich. So, and all that comes with that. So it looks really good. I think this trailer promises a very fun and moving movie. So I am very much looking forward to it. Have you seen the trailer?
Yes, I have. Yeah, it looks really great. I did not know that this was a book. I know that we had Lilani on last week and she was really, really excited about this. So I kind of read up on it just because of that. But I didn't realize that this was a thing that was happening, that it was such a beloved best-selling book, and that people were like super excited about this. So it's really awesome to see that it's got a lot of fans behind it. And I'll be curious to see how I like it when it hits theaters. I don't think it's out yet, or maybe it's limited release, but it's definitely not out for me.
August 17th.
Oh, okay. So it's probably making, I think it's making like the festival circuits probably, because I feel like some people have seen it, but
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they've read the book. Mm-hmm. No, but I think you're right. And I think that's good. And it's so good, too. Like, this is obviously a big selling point of the movie, that it's actually, like, in the title, Crazy Rich Asians, it's actually all Asian actors just acting out a movie and a plot that we have become so accustomed to seeing just white people do. Like, that's kind of the rom-com norm. It's very rare that it's not a majority of white people. So I just think this is really great, because it seems like, it doesn't seem like it should be unusual, but it is. So it's nice, because it's just another sign that Hollywood is opening its doors to other people, and for, you know, it's just great. It's really good. I love that this is happening, and I hope it's a sign of more to come.
So, Ian Somerhalder from The Vampire Diaries, which is a show that we both used to watch, has lined up his next project, and it's not straying too far away from The Vampire Diaries, funnily enough. He's actually set to star on another vampire series over on Netflix, but he will not be a vampire himself. The show is called V-Wars, and it's based off of the IDW series of the same name by Jonathan Mayberry. And in the show, he plays Dr. Luther Swan, a man whose life is turned upside down when his best friend, Michael Fain, is plagued by a disease that turns him into a predator who feeds on other humans. So as the disease, it kind of sounds like a zombie situation too, slowly starts to spread through humankind. Dr. Swan, who's Somerhalder's character, is on kind of a race against time as he fights to find answers and a cure. Meanwhile, his friend is also rising up in the ranks of the vampires, so that should be kind of interesting. I had no idea this was a series, but this sounds pretty interesting. Netflix has a really good knack of doing great adaptations, especially when the source material is already fairly gritty. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out when it premieres. And I'm kind of happy to hear that Somerhalder isn't going back into, you know, another set of things, so to speak.
I bet that by the season finale, he will also have become a vampire.
Oh, man.
That's my prediction. And then he's like, oh no, what do I do? I have to hide my vampirism while still trying to find a cure. Oh no. And then that's season two. I'm not interested in this. I'm tired of Ian Somerhalder and vampires in general, but I'm glad you're excited about this. When is Medici coming out anyway?
Probably soon. I don't know. I mean, like, honestly, like, I think I pretty much watch, like, anything Netflix gives us in the press screening site, I'll watch at least, like, the first episode of, just because it's there and it's free and I can, like, decide whether I want to keep up on it or whatever. Yeah. So if it, like, comes my way, I'll probably at least watch the pilot.
Oh, good. And you can tell
us. Yeah, then I'll let you guys know if you should watch it or if you should stay away.
Yeah. One series that I'm really excited about, and this is the news story is a little old, but we didn't get to it last week, and I really wanted to bring it up. National Geographic, or Nat Geo, the TV channel, is developing a series based on Hidden Figures. Of course, you know the movie starring, my names today. What is her name?
Taraji P. Henson, Janelle yes. Monáe, and Octavia Spencer.
Yes, exactly. As the famous NASA, women of NASA, Katherine G. Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson. So Nat Geo is developing a series that actually, when I read the headline, I assumed it would be like a docuseries, but it is actually going to be a scripted series. So it's going to focus on their lives, but be a longer narrative, obviously, that is probably going to be maybe a little bit more factual, I guess, in its adaptation, like a little more truthful, because Hidden Figures, the movie, is great, but it also, I think it takes some leaps and introduces some characters that didn't exist and stuff like that. So this series might give us like another take on that story, and it might sort of expand on their lives as mathematicians in NASA who helped America get to space. So that'll be really interesting. It's a good story, and it's a good piece of history to bring into the light. So I think it's great, and I'm really excited to see actually what they do with it.
I think that this is going to be so much fun, and I really liked the movie too, and obviously we got like a slice of the story, so it's really great that we're going to get a little bit more. You know, obviously, like, it's out there for us to, like, read up on, but it's always kind of fun. Kind of like with The Queen, when we get the story kind of packaged up in a TV show. And National Geographic is a reputable source for a lot of different things, so I'm sure that they'll do a great job with this.
For sure, for sure. Three queens this time. Haha, Netflix, take that.
Well, we're coming out to our last story of the week, which is something that I really wanted to talk about. Kendrick Lamar, of course, put out a new album called Damn last year, and the album is so, so good. It is a rap album, obviously, because he's like the biggest rock star around, so that's not everybody's cup of tea, but I was a really big fan of this album. I really just liked the way that he, you know, was able to kind of grapple with everything from what fame has done to him and how he deals with success now to like family life to like his past. And it was just like so different from Good Kid, Mad City and To Pimp a Butterfly in a different way. Like it was still linear like those albums, but in a completely different way. Anyway, this album is really, really great. And if you haven't listened to it, I would highly recommend doing so if you're into his kind of music. And if not, maybe look up some of his performances, because he's a great performer and he's done a bunch of performances on the Grammy stage, Billboard Music Awards, things like that. He's just wonderful. And I'm not the only one that thinks so, clearly, because on top of his hordes of fans, he also won a Pulitzer Prize for his album this year. And this was a really big deal because Pulitzer Prize winners, you know, they do go to like musicians and stuff like that, or the prize does go to musicians, but they very rarely go to musicians in the rap genre. And he's actually like the first rapper to win a Pulitzer Prize. Usually they go to jazz or classical musicians. So it's kind of cool that he scooped this up, especially given that, you know, he lost out for Album of the Year at the Grammys, which was cause for much discord online. But I think winning a Pulitzer is a little bit cooler, and they have a very, very, very wordy explanation for why they chose his album, and they called it a virtuistic song collection unified by its vernacular authenticity and rhythmic dynamism that offers an affecting vignette capturing the complexity of modern African-American life. That's a very fancy way of saying that basically he was able to tell a story of what it's like to be Black in America. So,
yeah,
there you go. But I just think that this is so cool, and he is one of the best artists out there right now, so it's great to see him get more success, and it's very well deserved.
Great. Awesome. So we're going to do TV show of the week, and this week there's only one show that matters to Hype Podcast, and that is, of course, The 100. I was going to make a joke, but I literally could not think of a single other show.
It's back, bitches. That's all. It's just back, keep bitches. Saying that.
Yeah. It's like the funniest thing. The GIFs have been all over. Unfortunately, no one said this in the first episode of season 5. So I don't know. That kind of, you know, brings the whole thing down a notch. No, just kidding. I'm glad no one did that. It would be funny if, like, new character Charmaine, she looked into the camera and she was like, "I'm back, bitch." And we're like, what?
It's just the funniest line because, like, so if you, it just doesn't make sense in the context of the show anymore because they're so far beyond that. But a very, like, great pilot episode of the CW line, like, fits right in with that.
Yeah, 100%. You know, line of thought. It's so fun. It's so funny going back to the pilot, I swear to God. But anyway, we're not here to talk about the pilot. We're here to talk about the first episode of The 100 Season 5. Which is finally aired after 14 months or something ridiculous as that. The season hiatus has been immense, and it's kind of hard to believe that the first episode is here. It's even more hard to believe because I've been sitting with this episode for a couple of weeks. So every time I see something about it on Twitter, I'm like, oh no, spoilers! So I'm like still adjusting to that reality, but as you guys know, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you know that I cover The 100 for Hypeable extensively, and I have watched the show, I've done previews, I've done my review. I'm very, very, very excited to hear what Pam thinks, because I haven't heard at all, except for like 2 tweets. So tell me
know,
all your feels, Pam.
I know, because I just, like, you know what, this episode, I started watching it, and then I had every intention of live tweeting, and then it was like boom, 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 everything was happening, and I just couldn't keep up,
so fast.
And I just needed to concentrate, so I got like my one tweet out there and responded to like 3 people, and that was it. But yeah, it was really, really good. Oh my gosh, so like, I don't know. Well, I'm assuming that you guys remember because most of you follow along on our weekly podcast. But for anybody that's brand new and checking this out, because Selena has tweeted it out and said that we're talking about the season premiere in this segment, I went to WonderCon this year and the cast was there. And during the panel, we got to watch the first 10 minutes. And I figured out, like, while I was watching via the CW app the next morning, that the reason that originally we thought it was going to be the first 15 minutes is because it ends up being 15 minutes with all of the commercials and the previously on the 100.
Right.
So it's 10 minutes of actual footage, but like 15 minutes total in the runtime of the show. Anyway, small little tidbit there. So yeah, like the first 10 minutes were really, really intense. We talked about that before on a previous episode of this podcast. I don't know why I thought it wasn't going to get even more intense from that point out, but it was just really cool to see more of Clark in the beginning. Maddie had a really crazy entrance. Definitely lives up to everybody saying that, you know, she was going to stand on her own as a character. So even though Clark's going to be total mama bear, doesn't necessarily mean that Maddie can't fend for herself. We definitely see that the first time that she's introduced. Was not expecting that. All the kids on the 100 are super vicious, by the way.
Yeah,
but my favorite by far, like, as much as I love Clark, I was just really excited to get up to Space Crew and see how they were faring up there. And that did not disappoint. I was really excited to see all of those characters again. And yeah, it just sets up so much. It sets up more than like it gives us answers to. But I'm really excited for this season. And it looks so amazing, just like from a cinematic point of view. Like, the show looks so good this season, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm really excited to see more. I know that you've seen like 5 episodes now, so I feel like
4 episodes.
Okay,
yeah.
I feel like you're like, just you wait, you know.
I know. But actually, just for this one episode, I think there's so much. And it's such a good episode. I really love it. Those first 20 minutes that it ended up being just Clark, I think were... I said this in my review as well. I think that's one of the best decisions that the show has ever made. I think it's really brave, you know, because not only because she's a female character alone on screen, but just because TV isn't necessarily a medium where people are alone for very long, because that's not how TV works. You know, TV is interesting because of the connections between people. It's not a one-man show. So having Clark for 20 minutes, and not once are you like, or at least I wasn't like, okay, where's everyone else? Like, you're just enraptured by her story as she's moving through the world as it used to be and kind of saying goodbye to the 100 as it was on her little trip down memory lane, right? So it was beautiful. I thought Eliza Taylor did such an amazing job. And like, just for those first 20 minutes, I think the show deserves so much praise, because it really doubles down on the commitment to this lead character. And I think some people are like, oh, Clark is just there to serve blah 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 other character, and it's like, no, Clark is the lead. Clark is there to be Clark. Clark is amazing. She can literally do anything. Like, there's nothing Clark can't do. That she doesn't need the other characters. That's what I love about this episode. She doesn't need them, but she misses them, and that's legit. Like, we want to see her get back together with these people because they care about each other, not because they necessarily like need each other because there's something she can't do on her own. So I love that. I'm really curious to hear, Pam, what were some of your favorite new developments? Like, which new character or which new like sort of versions of the characters were you most excited about or most surprised by?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Well, I think that, like, starting with Clark, you definitely see a little bit more of maturity on her end. I really liked one of my favorite things about the show is, like, how almost self-aware the characters are of, like, the general themes that the show presents. Like, we talked a lot before about how the show, like, there's really, like, no right or wrong. It's just more like people trying to survive, and everybody kind of thinks that they're doing the right thing for like their group. So nobody is necessarily evil. They're just evil in like the eyes of the other people that they happen to encounter along their journey. So I really appreciated that line that, you know, like where Clark is kind of like reminiscing on everybody that they've interacted with. And she's just like, nobody's like really, you know, they're all just trying to do the right thing. And I don't know, I feel like sometimes Clark can be a little bit selfish and immature. She has been in the past trying to, you know, make things work out for her, but being on her own and stuff like that, you already kind of see that she's kind of had to evolve to be kind of like a grown up, you know, and figure out how to deal. So I really liked that. And it was really cool to see that up on Space Crew. I mean, Bellamy's still like the leader of that. And I'm interested to see, as always, like what's going on in Murphy's head, because it seems like they're still butting heads there. But at the same time, it almost kind of feels like they've reached some kind of settlement, too. Like, he's always going to be a little bit prickly. And I definitely see that big brother, little brother aspect that they were talking about at WonderCon playing in, especially in that scene where he kind of like surprise attacks him and stuff. But it's not necessarily violent. Yeah. But I'm like, but that like very much intrigues me, because like Murphy is, all we know of him is that he's a loose cannon, but he's had to have grown up somehow, you know, during the time that we've not been with them. They all kind of seem like one big happy family for now up there, though. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, they do. Space Crew is really great. Space Crew is like, they're the best crew. Space Crew is the best crew. And I feel like they're the ones that I want to succeed and stay together. And I think that's going to, a lot of the tension this season is going to come, obviously, when they land on the ground. And these seven people who essentially, like, obviously they have chosen each other, but they've also had no choice, really. They've been up there, just those seven people. They've made it work. They don't have, like, there's no option of being like, Murphy can go find his own food if he doesn't want to hang out with us. Like, they have to feed him and they have to be with him and they have to all be together and work together. And I think once they get, if they get to the ground, then, and meet up with everyone else, like Bellamy is going to be meeting up with Octavia, and they're going to meet Clark again. There's going to be the Eligious crew. And it's just going to be, I think, really interesting to see if these seven people, if the family that they've developed over those 6 years is strong enough that they're still going to choose each other once everyone else is back with them. And that's actually like the way in which I think those 6 years are used most effectively, is just to show us how it's half a dozen years, you know, it's over half a decade that these people have been together. What does that mean? Like, what does that number actually mean for them in terms of how connected they are and how much, how natural it has become for them to be together? So I really like that. And I think that some of the developments in Space Crew are also really interesting. There's obviously Harper and Monty are still together, which is adorable. I love them. They're so sweet. And Imori and Murphy had broken up, which is kind of sad. But it also, I honestly, like, I think it's interesting. You know, I think that it is interesting that those two characters who seemed so tied to each other haven't made it work. Whereas it's Imori that is now completely with his people. Like, she has just integrated so completely into the group, and how that's probably making him feel more like inferior in a way, because he could never fully integrate into Space Crew, but he could be her crew, her people. And then when she joined Space Crew, she's the one who fits in, like, straight, like, she just makes it work and she puts in the work too, and he doesn't. And so how that's making him feel, I find such an interesting development for them. And so true to who they are, you know, it doesn't feel disingenuous. So I love that. And then there's Bellamy and Echo, which I almost like don't want to talk about because people are so mad about it. Did you think about that development or any of the Space Crew development?
Oh, man. Well, that one was like, ooh, I thought about maybe checking out what Twitter had to say about that. And then I figured that I would stay away for a bit.
Yeah,
but I thought that was a really interesting move, especially given that, like, I mean, like, if you're like looking for the Bellark in the episode, like, there's a lot of that with Clark, like, radioing up to Bellamy whole episode. So, I mean, again, like, if you're looking for the romantic ties, like, you could, you know, surmise that she's down there pining and, like, waiting and, like, missing him. And then he's up there with Echo, like, la 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 la, you know. Living their life. But, like, again, it's, I think it's a lot easier for Space Crew to move on because they have each other and they need to figure out how to survive and, you know, be there for anybody that they do come across later. And Clark's, like, on her own, basically. Like, her life is now split into two parts. She's got her life with Maddie, and then she's got her past, which, you know, of course she can't let go of because there was no closure. So,
yeah,
it's hard.
She's waiting.
She's just waiting. You know. Yeah, the girl who waited.
Oh no!
I know.
You did that.
I did that.
I should have called my review that. Oh my god!
Oh my god! Damn it!
What a missed opportunity.
You should have talked to me about it.
Jesus, I should have. Oh my god! I'm gonna regret that forever. Okay. So anyway, yeah. No, I agree. I think it is honestly about the Bellamy and Echo thing. I know the fandom is super upset about it, and I guess I made some comments about it in my review, and that's kind of like my opinion of it. I think that I saw it, we all saw it coming. Like, it's so obvious, which isn't to say it can't happen, because sometimes things progress like that. But I just think we were all like, okay, so here's Echo. Okay, so they're doing this scene with them. It's obvious setup. When are they going to get together? Okay, fine, we get it. But actually, I will say that I find it to be an interesting development because of Octavia. You know, I think that over the 6 years in space, I think Bellamy and Echo being together now does a lot of work in terms of telling us how Bellamy and Echo's priorities have both shifted, you know, and how much they genuinely do trust each other, because there was never going to be a point when Bellamy, like, people are saying it's out of character for Bellamy, but I think what it shows is that this is how Bellamy has changed over those 6 years. Like, there was never going to be a point in his time on the ground when he was gonna be able to find it in himself. As much as I think he recognized himself in Echo, I don't think he was ever going to find it in himself to be with her because of what had happened between them and because of how much he blamed her for what she did to Octavia. And I think showing him in a place where he's able to be with her now tells us that he has moved past that. It tells us that he has taken that, like, turn the page thing that Kane told him seriously, and that he's applying that to himself and to Echo and to everyone else. This is a new chance for all of them, and they, the seven of them, have been bonded so closely that this is now a thing that can happen. I think that's what we're meant to take from it. And then I think once they land on the ground and he's all like, don't worry, Octavia will be fine, there's not a problem, and then, like, smash cut to her and on her iron throne.
Oh my god, I saw that and I was fight. Like, I oh my god, but also why am I surprised? Of course she'd be like the ruler of the most vicious.
Oh my god, I don't know why you would be surprised.
I'm not. I think I had like that moment and then I was like, yeah. But wait, of course, everything about this is of course. Right.
Exactly. And so I'm like, that is obviously things are going to change on the ground. Obviously, this is not the conclusion to any story. This is a setup for a whole bunch of new story. And I think it's interesting. I do think that that will be interesting. I think it will contextualize the choices that Bellamy will have to make between Octavia, between Space Crew, between Clark, between all of this stuff. And I think this is going to, as long as Echo, it's like I'm thinking, as long as Echo is not a pawn, like as long as she has not been written into the story to be a piece of that story for Bellamy. You know, she's a main character now. I expect that she will be a main character. And also, but I know she will, because I know she has a lot of character scenes with Raven and stuff coming up. Like they told, Lindsay said that in the interview and stuff. So I'm not too worried about that. But yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious to see what happens. And I'm curious how fandom will react to it long term, because the initial reactions have not been great. It's kind of like, it's kind of marring the whole episode. And I'm kind of a little bit, not that I in any way want the writers to take this into account when they're writing their story. I think that it's really important that they stick to the story they have planned and not let fandom dictate them in either direction. But it is kind of making me a little bit sad, because this was such a fantastic episode. And this one scene, this one development is really upsetting people. And they're saying how, oh, you know, it's so frustrating to see how the 100 puts plot over character. But I think if you were going to make that argument that that's what they're doing, I think that this is the only place they're doing it. I think the entire rest of the episode puts character over plot in a really, really good way. So I think that is it's kind of making me sad that it's overshadowing everything. And obviously they knew that when they put it into the episode, they knew this was the reaction they were going to get. But it's fine. They're not doing, hopefully they're not writing to a reaction, I like to think. It's, if this was where they wanted the story to go, then I believe that this is where the story needs to go. And then the final thing I wanted to bring up as well was just, you touched on this too, was the possible sort of connection between Octavia and Maddie and Clark. Like, this is so interesting. So Maddie is a Nightblood, obviously, that's how she survived. She's terrified of the Nightblood Scouts when Clark first finds her. She's raised on stories of Sky Ripper, the Beast, Octavia, who is like basically a superhero in Clark's, in Maddie's eyes. And how do you think that's going to go? How do you think, because Octavia leads the bunker crew now. She's the leader, but she's not a Nightblood. What kind of story do you predict that might lead to?
I feel like it's definitely going to shake up this happy family situation that Clark and Maddie have got going now. I think that Octavia, as much as I love her, she's definitely a loose cannon, and she's probably the most extreme. And if the preview we got of her this first episode is anything to go by, this is the most extreme version of Octavia we've gotten ever. To put that in line with somebody like Clark, who she doesn't like very much anyway, like they're always butting heads. And then on top of that, to have Maddie in the mix, who's like very impressionable. It's mm-hmm. kind of like all signs point to the fact that a fire is going to start, and it's probably going to be very explosive when they end up meeting up. But I don't have any theories as to what's going to go down, but I mean, if Maddie's in the middle, I know that, and they're both interested and, you know, her best interest or making sure that she's following one over the other, like neither of them are going to give up. So,
okay.
You know what
well,
I mean?
Interesting. Yeah, sure. I'm interested in this. I think that you can derive from the first episode that there might be some tension there, but I guess we will see what happens. Oh my gosh, is there anything else that you want to bring up from the first episode? Do you have any theories? Are you surprised? Like, what are you most excited to see? Are you excited to see the reunions or what's happening in the bunker or anything like that?
Your BFF Sachin has promised that the bunker is unlike anything we've ever seen and the most extreme. So I'm really excited to get down there, but I'm also a little scared. That's basically what he said.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh my god, it's gonna be so fun. I say fun, you that might not be the accurate word. I guess you'll see, but that's next week, so you don't have to wait too long to go to the bunker. And what do you think of Eligius, my final question, the newcomers?
Yeah, well, Clark's already on their bad side because she's murdered two of their men, right? So I don't really know what to think of them yet. It's so hard to kind of judge all these new groups based on like first impressions because everybody's got so many layers on this show. And yeah.
Oh my God, it's talking to you is like talking to Jason. You will not give me a straight answer. I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's really hard because like you want to be like, oh, like they must be evil because they're trying to kill Clark, but at the same time it's like, well, everybody's just trying to defend themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like they have no reason to trust her and she has no reason to trust them. There's no telling whether they're gonna be like crazy mountain men or they're gonna be like okay.
Yeah, right. I'm really interested in these newcomers. I think that Charmaine Dioza especially is really interesting, but I will say that the comparison to the delinquents landing on Earth in season one is obviously flawed because these are not the same type of people. And I think the way that they come in, unlike the delinquents that landed on the ground and immediately started getting drunk and having some kind of weird party, like it's very clear these people come in with weapons, you know, they scout the village, they search for people, they are making a very strong statement that they are here with force, you know? And I think that's a big difference. You know, I think when we talk about the 100 and there are no good guys and how everyone is the same, I do think we also have to acknowledge that not everyone is the same. Like, there's a difference between going to a place with weapons and without weapons. You know, that's a huge difference and that sends a very different signal. So I think Clark is 100% right to be wary of them. And I think once they have Maddie at gunpoint, I don't think, because that's the thing that people are saying, oh, well, Maddie and Clark are basically the grounders now and doing what the grounders did to the delinquents when they first landed. And that's not true. Like, that's just not, like, we can talk about the story without making these false parallels. And so I think what I'm trying to say is that I think that these people are, like, it's okay to be scared of them. It's okay to say, okay, well, there's clearly something villainous about them. They're literally prisoners, you know, they're like non-violent offenders with me. That's what Zeke Shaw said, all two of them. So we know that this is a seriously dangerous faction. We saw that big ass gun that they had. But that said, obviously, they are just like they are have landed on the planet. They have no idea what happened and they're just trying to find it out, even though they're violent and a genuine threat to Clark. And she's right. I think she's perfectly within her right to meet violence with violence. I also think that it's okay to say that, okay, this religious crew actually is violent and actually is dangerous and actually is someone that we can't sort of, we can't necessarily just be on their team immediately. We need a
reason. It's just kind of hard for me because, like, for example, when the original crew came down, the original 100 came down, like, they didn't think anybody was going to be on Earth. So yeah, they were, like, unprepared, but that was more the naivety of everybody that was actually in charge up in space. or not necessarily of the kids, you know, because like they're like too young to really like think like, oh, maybe we better get like some guns over here. But also they were never going to send them down there with guns anyway, because they were all delinquents. In contrast,
yeah,
well,
that's
like,
what I'm, that's kind of what I mean.
Yeah, it's just like hard
they didn't
to
come to fight.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I don't know. Are they coming to fight or are they just like preparing to watch their backs? That's all I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a good, a good point. It's a good point. I just mean that like there's a the fundamental difference of kids coming down without guns and adults coming down with guns is a difference, you know? So in terms of like the grounders attacking and killing them to be like, stay out of our territory versus them coming in with guns and attacking and killing Maddie and Clark, like they immediately went on the defensive, you know? So it's not to say that they are, that it's a more than an initial difference, but it definitely is a difference. It's like if the delinquents had acted this way in season one when they came down, I would have been like, okay, well, of course the grounders are fighting back against that, you know? Whereas when they did come down and they were just kind of kids, it was like, okay, well, you know, you are killing kids, like, so yeah, so basically what I'm trying to say is that it's always different, like there's always similarities, but it's always a different situation and you can't judge them like exactly the same way.
I get that,
because this time it's the newcomers going after the kids, like, mm-hmm. You could also frame it that way. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I'm really interested in Charmaine and in Zeke Shaw and in McCreary and in everyone else, and I hope that I'm really glad you liked this episode. I thought it was probably the best, probably my favorite season premiere, just for Clark, you know, for that massive Clark sequence. And we should also say before we move on that this episode, I believe, had the best ratings that the show has had since season three episode three. Which is amazing, because it just shows, you know, the 100 has gone through a rough patch, you know, and it I think it shows that the show is moving on from that. You know, when I was doing my preview for the season, I said, you know, I don't like this to be hyperbole, because I know I say this, I know I'm a big fan of the show, but I really believe that season 5 is the like probably going to be the best season of The 100 to date. And I really believe that they've stepped it up a notch in terms of story and character and all that stuff. So I'm really happy to see the ratings reflect this. It's going to be a good season.
I'm so excited to watch more. I think that it's always like, you know, I'm always excited to come back to this world. But you can also, like, especially for us, because we consume so much television, it's like that's part of our job, you know, to consume and also to write. You can always tell when something is going to excite, not necessarily just like the super passionate fans, but also like the general masses that happen to tune in. And you can just feel that this is going to excite like anybody, no matter if you're completely obsessed with the show or if you're just like a casual watcher. So that's what's really exciting for me.
Yeah, exactly. Same. Okay, so that's the 100 reaction for the first episode. We are excited to hear if you have anything to say about this episode. You can send us an email, hype@hypeable.com, and you can tweet us @hypeablehype. All right, so moving into listener feedback now, do you want to get the comment from HP481516?
Yes, HP481516 says, Selena, I also didn't love season one of The Magicians, mainly because Quentin and Alice are the worst. Now that you say it, though, I can totally see the bad version of Finn and Clark comparisons. But season two gets better and season three is even better. Ooh, it sounds like you're gonna have to keep watching.
I know. I'm actually like halfway through season two and I don't know, guys. I guess I'll stick it out if you say season three is better. I don't know. I somehow can't seem to stop watching it, even though I end up stopping halfway through an episode a lot of the time because I'm like, ugh, I can't take it anymore. But I do love Julia and Katie. I think they are great. And even though Julia currently is not herself, I think I'm really interested in that storyline, so I will keep watching for them. Twitter, we have a bunch of tweets as well to get into. The first one is from Gina, who was real, hashtag, wink, wink. She says, just listened to episode 183, The Magicians does get better in season two. You definitely want to punch Quentin in the face less as time goes on. I'd recommend sticking with it a little longer. Hashtag Margot is the best. Yeah, Margot, of course. Margot is, like, the best. I agree.
We have another tweet here from Laura Morrow who says, okay, friends, I have two book recs for you. One, Listen to Your Heart by Cassie West, is a romance themed around a podcasting club. What? Amazing. That's not what she said. That's what I said. Laura continues, super cute and super fast read. Number two, Not If I Save Your First. It is a thriller slash survival story set in the Alaskan wilderness, and it is so good. She also writes, you all, a miracle has occurred. I finally watched a horror movie that I love and actually rooted for the characters in, and that is A Quiet Place. Emily Blunt was amazing, and having a deaf actress in one of the lead roles made me really happy. I haven't seen this movie yet, but everybody's talking about it. Either. So
I know. I know that, like, everyone says, oh, I hated horror movies, but I really like this one. So I guess I should watch it because I hate horror movies. So I will like this one. Amanda Miller says, update, maybe binging wasn't a great idea for The 100 mid-season 3. Two of my favorites are gone. Also, the FedEx man showed up after Lincoln happened, and I very quickly had to put myself together. Oh, no. I'm sorry, Amanda. Please stick with it. Hopefully you didn't just listen to our big spoiler discussion for season 5, but it gets better. If you can say that, like, it does. It really sort of... Anyway, you will see. You will see. I feel your feels.
Julia says, feel like hype will appreciate that I dreamed Voldemort was in the season 5 premiere of The 100. He had amnesia, thought his name was Steve, and didn't know he was evil. He also looked like this. She sent a really funny gif, by the way. I saw that, and it was great. Yeah. She continues... Not sure how season 5 could live up to my expectations now. I hope that you liked it, Julia, because clearly we were big fans, so.
I know, but I mean, after that dream, I don't know how it can live up to your expectations either, I gotta be honest. And finally, Jasmine Diaz says, it's so cool you guys are on Spotify now. Congratulations. Thank you, Jasmine, and thank you for giving us a reason to talk about that. So like we said last episode, Hype Podcast is finally on Spotify, along with, of course, iTunes, and we would love it if you guys would subscribe to us. And Spotify, having it on Spotify, too, makes it a lot easier because, let's be real, the podcast app is ridiculous. Like, it is the worst. Like, you can only... As soon as there's a new episode of a podcast up, the old one kind of disappears. It's really hard to find, which means that I always find if I fall behind on podcasts that I have to, like, I listen to them in backwards order because it's just how it intuitively does it in the podcast app, and it really annoys me. And so having us on Spotify now, not only does it mean that maybe other people can find us, but it also just means that I think for you guys who listen, who have Spotify, that it's going to make your listening experience a lot easier and smoother.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad.
It's really great. You can actually, even if you just use the free version or if you sign up for, if you pay for Spotify or if you're thinking about doing the new Hulu Spotify bundle, which is a really great deal. I think it's like $14.99 and you get both of them ad free. That's pretty cool. Or like they also have college discounts. Anyway, there's like lots of ways to pay for Spotify, but of course you can also use their free platform. You can follow our show on there and you'll get an alert every time we post a new episode. So that's a really great way to keep up with new episodes as they come out. And you can actually, like, if you wanted to, you could go back and listen all the way to episode 1 because all of the episodes are on there and it's really easy to find them because you can just scroll down to your heart's content. You don't even have to worry about downloading episodes and wasting like space if you have too much stuff on your phone. You can literally just stream right from the app on your phone if you have the Spotify app, or you can stream from like online, or if you have like the desktop app, you can stream on there too. So it's a really great way to check out our show if you're having trouble with the podcast app. Like Selena has mentioned, it's got like a few bugs that they're, I think, hopefully going to work out, but it's definitely not as user-friendly as it used to be when it was all integrated into the normal iTunes app. So, yes.
All right, so that brings us to the end of the listener feedback. If you guys want to submit to your thoughts on anything we talked about this week, or if you have any Infinity War thoughts or The 100 thoughts or thoughts on anything else, or you have recommendations for us and your fellow listeners, you can tweet us at HyperboleHype. You can send us an email, hype@hyperbole.com. you might be able to leave a comment on the podcast section. I feel like Hypeable,
we got rid of comments. It has
been redesigned again. Right, and we got rid of comments again. So you can't leave your comments on there. I'm really sorry. I feel like actually it's really frustrating because when we got the comments back, we started hearing from listeners we haven't heard from in a while who maybe just prefer to comment on the site. So that's annoying. But anyway, we're not in charge of that. So you can tweet us or email us, and you can also find us on Instagram at HypeableHype and on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you are interested in subscribing to us on Patreon, that is $2 a month, and you get a bonus segment each week, as well as 2 monthly videos and giveaways, which we have a couple lined up that we have to get to. It's just been super busy this spring. So we'll let you know more details about that over on Patreon. That is patreon.com/hypepodcast. And this week's bonus discussion will be about the decision that Disney has made to take Li Shang, the character, out of Mulan, because we are interested in talking about that. So head on over to Patreon if you want. And otherwise, thank you for listening to Hype 184. And we will be back next week for 185. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
We're no longer back, bitches.
Peace out, bitches.
Yeah, that's how the show will end.
Oh, no.